It's time to play like a Jet with your host, Scott Mason.
Play like a Jet. What does that mean?
Mekhi Becton, ladies and gentlemen, human beings that large should not run as fast as Mekhi Becton did. And if you like people just abusing other humans, the Mekhi Becton tape is for you.
Denzel Mims with another monster score of 70 yards.
Quick pass to Crowder, trying to get him out of space. Slips a tackle, and there he goes. Crowder, it's a foot race, and Crowder is in there. A 69-yard touchdown.
Takes a shot. Here's Corey Davis, wide open. Davis. Still going, and he's in for the touchdown.
Hill hit immediately when he got the handoff.
You know who that's?
The Q-inator.
Oh, my gosh.
Listen, thank you.
From the PlayLikeAJet.com digital studios, this is Play Like a Jet. My name is Scott Mason. You can follow me on Twitter at PlayLikeAJet1. And it's time for part one of the weekend mailbag. So for that, we bring in the owner, the operator, the lead reporter, the whole shebang over at JetsInsider.com. And above all of that, a very big deal, Mr. Chris Nimbley. And Chris, we left off last week talking about the Jets trade up for Elijah Vera Tucker. And since you're the very big deal, in very big deal fashion, you went ahead and explained why you thought the Elijah Vera Tucker deal was a good one for the Jets. The other factor that you forgot to mention, Chris, is the separation of tiers with prospects. So in other words, if they had Elijah Vera Tucker rated in their top 10, which it sounds like they did, and maybe even higher than that, and they had him far above whoever the next offensive line prospect on their board was, let's say Tevin Jenkins, then it absolutely makes sense to do that. Because if you think that Jenkins is going to be good, but you think that Elijah Vera Tucker is going to be great, then it's worth making that move up the board. And that's why I always say, if there's a player you really want, make the move, as long as it's not insanely costly. We looked at what happened last year. I use this example all the time with the Eagles. They didn't trade up for CeeDee Lamb. Instead, they let him go to a division rival. And the second round pick that they were so insistent upon keeping, they used on a backup quarterback. When you looked at the totality of the situation, it was the move that sowed the seeds of their own destruction, because Carson Wentz's confidence was shattered by the fact that they used that second round pick on Jalen Hurts. And on top of that, instead of getting CeeDee Lamb, who could have been an incredible weapon for Carson Wentz and maybe helped him not be as bad as he was last year, they got Jalen Reagor, who I liked, but I liked him as a second round type of guy. And he didn't have any kind of impact really last year for the Eagles. So when there's a guy like an Elijah Vera Tucker who you think can be a major difference maker and you can get him without giving up a ton, go do it. And that's what Joe Douglas did. Now we'll find out if Vera Tucker is going to be that guy that they're expecting him to be.
The Eagles learned their lesson because they traded up to get the receiver this year. Mm-hmm. So they made that mistake last year. They learned the lesson and they traded up to get the receiver they really wanted this year.
Exactly. They didn't want to let history repeat itself. And so they got aggressive this year. And that's why if there's a blue chip player that you really want and you can get him without giving up a ton. Now, we're not talking about being like Mike Tannenbaum, where you do this every year and you trade up every single year. And it's not necessarily for a blue chip player and you're just trade happy. That's different. But Joe Douglas doesn't seem to have the mentality of must trade up every single year. He'll put deals in place where if he has to move up a little bit, if there's a guy he really wants, he'll do it. But he's not going to give up the farm to make it happen. And I don't think that giving up 2 third-rounders and getting back a fourth, by the way, so it was really a third-rounder and a third-for-fourth pick swap, is that exorbitant in a price if we're talking about a player that he thinks can be a stud for him on that offensive line for the next 10 to 15 years. I ran a poll on Twitter and I was surprised by the results a little bit, because 97% of the people said yes to this. I said, considering what the Jets gave up to get him, not just the draft pick, but also trading up with Elijah Vera Tucker, would you be content if he turned out to be another Joe Tooney? In other words, a really, really good guard for a long time, but not an elite player like a Zach Martin or a Quentin Nelson or somebody like that. Because remember, Tooney is very good, but he isn't this perennial Pro Bowler or an All-Pro or anything like that. He's just a really stable, solid rock at the position. I'd say he's somewhere in that 5 to 10 range in terms of guards in the NFL. So I asked if people would be satisfied with that. 97% of people said yes. You know how fans are, especially this time of year, with unrealistic expectations. I remember a couple of years ago, I said that I would be thrilled if Sam Darnold was anywhere near as good as Phillip Rivers, and people flipped out saying, you don't make this move and go all the way up to number 3 for Phillip Rivers. He didn't even want a playoff game, blah, 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 blah.
That's a fundamental misunderstanding of how good Phillip Rivers was. That's the disconnect on that.
Well, of course, Chris, but that's my point. Expectations are insane this time of year, so I was surprised, pleasantly so, that 97% of people said yes to this question. What do you think? Would you be satisfied if he was Joe Tooney? And are you surprised that that many people seem to have a reasonable take on this?
I'm stunned. I'm flabbergasted that 97% of the people got the right answer on that. That number one, 97% of the vote on anything is that's stunning enough. 97% of the people who are right is mind-blowing. You can hope and want him to be better, more Quentin Nelson level. But if you're drafting anybody at any point in time, and like a Joe Tooney level of good would be considered a disappointment for you, then your expectations are wildly out of whack. I do think Elijah Vera Tucker has potential to be better than him. But for me to sit here and be like, oh, I'd be disappointed in or think of him as a little bit of a bust because he only got to Joe Tooney level, that seems absurd and ridiculous. Because, yes, you would ideally hope that he gets better. You want every guy you draft to be the best person who's ever played that position. It's surprising that that many people were able to think clearly and logically and be like, yes, okay, if he's Joe Tooney level good and we're placing him next to my Mekhi Becton, I'm going to be happy. That surprises me, but I think they are absolutely correct to have that that thought process.
Play like a Jet. Play like a Jet.
There's a great article up about all of this involving Elijah Vera Tucker, the expectations, and why the Jets making this trade was a good one at playlikeajet.com right now by Steve Ballou. And the title is, to the analytics crowd saying the New York Jets made a serious error trading up in the NFL draft for Elijah Vera Tucker, you're wrong. And if you haven't read this yet, you should go read it. But I'm going to give you the audio version right now because I think it's something that Jets fans need to hear, especially those that are getting rattled by some of these analytics guys that are trying to trash the move that Joe Douglas made. Here's what Steve had to say. It was one of the defining moments of the 2021 NFL draft for the Jets. Joe Douglas had just got his man, and he wasn't afraid to show how fired up he was about it. Earlier that night, Douglas had made what is likely to be the defining pick of his tenure as the New York Jets general manager by taking BYU quarterback Zach Wilson second overall. Now it was time to begin to build a wall around his new prized asset. Douglas got on the phone to Vikings general manager Rick Spielman and offered the trade. Spielman accepted. For their second pick in the first round, the Jets would now be on the clock at number 14 instead of number 23. It has to be for Vera Tucker, surmised Daniel Jeremiah on NFL Network, as news of the surprise trade up flashed onto the screen. He wasn't wrong about his old friend's intentions, and moments later, back at Florham Park, Douglas made the pick, pumped his fist, and bear hugged the nearest member of his team. And so the consensus number one interior offensive lineman in the draft was going to line up next to Mekhi Becton in that much-needed green wall protecting Zach Wilson. USC's Elijah Vera Tucker was a Jet, and at that point, Douglas wouldn't have been the only member of Gang Green giving out hugs. But a couple of weeks after the draft, it seems not everyone is as excited about the picks as Douglas. It would be fair to say that some in the NFL analytics community didn't like it. In fact, it would be more accurate to say they hated it, particularly Seth Walder. Here's what Walder had to say. For the Jets, this looks like an error. The overpay is by almost exactly the number 66 pick overall itself. Had that pick been removed, this trade would have been quote-unquote fair. I'm not arguing the Jets shouldn't have drafted an offensive lineman to protect Zach Wilson. On the contrary, I think they should have drafted more of them. If we want to put this trade in the context of players, think about it this way. If you were the Jets, for the same price, would you rather draft USC guard Elijah Vera Tucker or Oklahoma State tackle Tevin Jenkins and BYU tackle slash guard Brady Christensen? Jets GM Joe Douglas chose the former, but history indicates the latter is more likely to pay off. And that's not even counting the possibility that Darisaw or Vera Tucker might have slid to number 23. At the time of the Jets' selection, there was a 21% and 34% chance of those players making it to number 23, respectively, according to ESPN's Draft Day Predictor. Steve continues, "Now, if we're being totally honest, of course it's impossible to say 2 weeks after the draft how any pick will pan out. The numbers guys may be right in time, and if the only way you grade a pick is to compare value against draft charts, then at this very early stage, yes, you could say that the Jets did overpay to move up. Thankfully, though, the NFL is more about the numbers you put up on the field than the numbers in a draft chart, and this pick has a hell of a lot more nuance to it than the number crunchers are giving credit. What did the Jets give up to get AVT? The Jets moved picks 23, 66, and 86 to the Vikings in return for pick 14 and pick 143. Like Walder, overthecap.com's Jason Fitzgerald was not impressed. Here's what Jason had to say. Prepare for the you don't know football argument coming your way. For what it's worth, basically, Vera Tucker has to wind up the best guard in the NFL to justify a 3-for-1 swap. Just to correct Jason, it was a 3-for-2 swap. He's forgetting about that late fourth rounder. Steve continues, does AVT really have to be the best guard in the NFL? I'm a big fan of his work, but Fitzgerald's claim that AVT has to go on to become the best guard in the NFL seems wildly overblown. As Scott Mason, hey, that's me, said earlier this week, even if AVT only becomes a top 5-10 guard in the league but keeps Zach Wilson effectively protected for years to come, Jets brass and fans will be delighted they made this trade, as evidenced by the 97% who said they'd be happy if he became Joe Tooney and not an elite guard in the poll that I just mentioned. Steve continues, what Douglas has done is paid a price to minimize the risk that one of the guards protecting Wilson isn't good. He knows he's paid that price, and if the insurance policy pans out, 2 third-round picks and a fourth back won't feel like much to pay. The left side of that line will be set for years. Vera Tucker was the highest-ranked guard on nearly everyone's boards, and it wasn't even close. He can also slide to tackle if necessary. So devoid of talent on the offensive line for years, the Jets are finally making it a priority. Not only that, but the Jets have added serious talent at wide receiver in Corey Davis and Elijah Moore, and the last thing they want is Wilson on his back before he can find them the same way Darnold was so often. The offense that Mike LaFleur will scheme for the Jets relies heavily on the run game. The line, so often a weakness for the New York Jets in recent times, is going to have to become a strength, and quickly. Douglas nabbed many observers' best player at the position in the draft to help the Jets do this. But according to Walder's analysis, they overpaid to the tune of pick 66. Does that seem like too steep a price to pay, really? The Jets could have gotten Tevin Jenkins and Brady Christensen for the same price. Well, maybe. And will those two players turn out to be good? Maybe. And would they have been available when the Jets came to pick? Maybe. Would Vera Tucker fall to 23? Maybe. I'm going to jump in here and say that from what I've heard, there's absolutely 0% chance that Vera Tucker would have been there 23. Nick Spano from U Stadium has talked about this. He would have gone to the Vikings at 14 if they wouldn't have moved out of the pick, and there's no way he would have fallen past 17. Zero chance he makes it to 23. Steve continues, you see where I'm going here? Just as trading up for a player comes with risk, so does staying put when you have identified a player that has huge value to your team and who is available. And let's face it, it's not like the Jets gave up 2 first-round picks and a 3rd-round pick for a box safety. Hi, Seattle. Joe Douglas famously said he would build a wall to protect Sam Darnold. We all know how that turned out. He's going to need to do everything in his power to give Wilson all the tools he needs to succeed in New York. Below-average linemen are not going to cut it, as the Jets found out the hard way. Good ones rarely become available in free agency, and if they do, they sign with the Chiefs. Douglas should be commended for being bold enough to identify what he sees as a premier talent at the position and doing what needed to be done to secure him rather than let the Raiders take him, as many felt they would have at number 17. You don't have to love the trade, but killing it at this stage is silly. With so many holes to fill on the roster, sure, the Jets could have used those 3rd-round picks. I get it if you aren't in love with losing those picks as a Jets fan. Let's face it, there weren't many talking about trading up pre-draft. Now, without using Google, who remembers what the Jets traded to the Panthers to go up and get Darrelle Revis back in 2007? Anyone? I'm not comparing AVT to Revis as a player for 1 minute, nor am I saying that he will turn out to have half the impact the all-time great corner did for the Jets. Point is, no one cares what the Jets had to give up because Revis was unbelievable and the trade-up collateral is long forgotten. But I'm sure there were those in May 2007 who had charts saying the Jets overpaid 2 weeks after the draft and that for the trade to work, he had to be the best corner in the NFL. Speaking of numbers, Revis was selected at number 14. Guess where Vera Tucker was selected? And finally, let's remember, Seth Walder touted the run-stop win rate stat, which, according to him, showed that Aaron Donald was just an average run-stopper. I think that speaks for itself. Point is, there's more to football than numbers and charts, and thank God for that. Let's see how this pans out and give it more than 2 weeks before we use color-coded draft charts to destroy the Jets. Very well written by Steve. Go check it out right now, playlikeajet.com. And also, I will add one other point that he missed. Tevin Jenkins was available at number 34. The Jets passed on him. So while they did like Jenkins, obviously, they didn't like him anywhere near as much as they liked Vera Tucker because they could have had him at 23. If they'd stayed there, they chose to trade up for Vera Tucker. They could have had him again at 34, and they liked Elijah Moore better in that spot. So when you're talking about this entire trade in its totality, you have to consider all the factors, and Steve summed it up well. Football is more than color-coded charts and numbers. Let's see how this turns out. But I like Joe Douglas getting aggressive and going and getting his guy. He didn't give up that much. And if Vera Tucker turns out to be an excellent player, nobody is going to care that the Jets, quote-unquote, slightly overpaid according to some draft value charts. And now, with all that said, let's dip back into the mailbag. Next question comes in from Michael Parsons. He says, if you were to compare the Jets with the Jaguars, who would you say had the better offseason without sounding biased, since both teams had the same assets to spend, comparing coaching, draft, and cap space usage? I think the Jets definitely did. I just don't really love much of what the Jaguars did. I know that they got Trevor Lawrence, and that's awesome, but ATN, I think he'll be a fine player, but the way they seem to want to use him is very bizarre. They have three running backs now, and they're talking about how they want to have this elite running attack, and it's 2021. And then if you look at a lot of the rest of their free agent signings, I wasn't super impressed. Didn't love their draft either. The Jets weren't perfect this offseason, but I thought they added enough decent pieces in free agency and had a pretty good draft. So I believe that if we were to take a look at the two of them compared to each other, you'd have to say the Jets had a better offseason than the Jaguars.
Yeah, I'll break it down this way. So the Jags win in the quarterback acquisition department. Now, I don't know how you feel. Trevor Lawrence is the better prospect, so they win that. But look at free agency. I think the Jets did a lot more in free agency. If we could definitely talk about the draft, I think outside of the quarterbacks, the Jets did better. The ATN pick, first round pick, and then to come out and say he's going to be our third down back. And again, I said this during our draft night coverage. They found James Robinson. Like, they got James Robinson, and then they go and spend a first round pick on a new running back. That doesn't make sense to me. But the biggest reason why I go Jets here, you could throw everything else out and I'm still going Jets here. And it's because I don't trust Urban Meyer in the NFL. I don't trust that players are going to like and want to play for him in the NFL. The idea that, you know, the news came out about them giving Tim Tebow a workout. I just don't see Urban Meyer in the NFL working out long-term. Poor Trevor Lawrence, because I think that he actually went into one of the worst positions of this group, which isn't a shock. That's normally how it works with the first overall pick. But give me Robert Saleh over and four over Urban Meyer. It's as simple as that. I will take that. If we're talking college, then go ahead, Urban Meyer all the time. But I just don't know that that's going to translate well to the NFL.
That's going to wrap up part one of the mailbag. Make sure that you're following Chris on Twitter at CNimbly and at Jets Insider, and reading his very big deal work over at jetsinsider.com. And check out everything we're doing over at playlikeajet.com. Steve Ballew's article that I just read for you is available there. Check it out. He's got a bunch of visual aids to help drive the point home. So it's definitely worth reading, even though I just read the content for you here on the podcast. Luke Grant's got an over-under betting guide if you want to get in on the action early and start betting on some of these teams over-under win totals for the 2021 season. And speaking of Luke, he's doing some great work on our YouTube channel right now. Film breakdowns of Elijah Moore, Zach Wilson against Utah. They were the number 11 ranked defense in 2019. So he's got a whole all 22 film review of that particular game. He's got one of Michael Carter as well and so much more. Plus Caleb Pace's commentaries, Pace's playbook. If you haven't subscribed yet, go ahead and subscribe to our YouTube channel. And make sure you give us a 5-star review for the podcast on iTunes if you haven't done that already. Easy way to help out the show if you like what we're doing. Doesn't take you much time, doesn't cost you any money, but it goes a long way to help us out. So if you could go ahead and do that for us, we'd be quite grateful. And for the latest and greatest in New York Jets podcasts and content, you know where to go. That's Play Like a Jet Digital and playlikeajet.com.